Coming up, we're going to have Alan Schwartz from the New York Times about the dark days of hard-hitting NFL players and concussions, depression, and some of the new things that are coming out. We'll also be joined in a few minutes by Luke Jensen from ESPN. ESPN is everywhere talking about the upcoming Davis Cup starting Friday. But let's get back to this incredible book, Triumph, by Jeremy Schapp, and two particular stories. One about the Jewish sprinters, Jeremy, who at the last moment were denied the chance to compete for the United States. Tell us what that was about.
Well, the plan had always been, since the trials in July 1936 in the U.S., that the guys who would run the relay, the sprint relay, would be Frank Wyckoff, Floyd Draper, and two Jewish sprinters named Marty Glickman and Sam Stoller. Of course, Marty became one of the great broadcasters, pioneering sports broadcasters of all time. On the day of the race, the first day, it's run over the course of 2 days, the 4x100-meter relay. There's a meeting at which the head track coach informs the team that he's changed his mind, that he hears reports that the Germans and the Dutch have been hiding their best sprinters, a statement that's demonstrably absurd. You can't hide world-class sprinters. And so he insists on putting Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf on the team, who are the United States' best sprinters, two African-Americans. What happens then has been told different ways over the last 71 years. Marty Glickman said that Jesse Owens stood up and said, "Coach, I've already got my three gold medals. Let Marty and Sam run." Jesse said that he stood up and said, "I've got my medals. Let Sam Stoller run," but didn't mention Marty. Ralph Metcalf, for his part, one of Jesse's closest friends, said he didn't remember Jesse saying anything. So it was kind of a he said, she said for a long, long time. The accusation by Marty Glickman and others was that anti-Semitism was involved, that Avery Brundage, who we previously mentioned, and Lawson Robertson were basically kowtowing to Hitler, did not want to embarrass the Fuhrer by putting Jews on the gold medal podium. That's possible. I think it's just as likely that the assistant track coach, Dean Cromwell, who is the USC track coach, just was protecting his guys, who happened to be Foy Draper and Frank Wyckoff, and wanted them to win gold medals. Regardless, what people haven't talked about for more than 70 years is the fact that Jesse lobbied to be on the relay after winning his three individual gold medals. And I'm not saying he didn't have the right to. He was the best in the world. Today it wouldn't even be an issue.
It wouldn't be an issue today.
It wouldn't be an issue. At that time, it was kind of half and half. Sometimes the best guys ran, sometimes they didn't run in the relay. The U.S. usually won handily, so they figured, let's give all the guys gold medals. But for some reason, for more than 70 years, nobody's reported that all week long Jesse was saying, you know, boy, I really want to run and get another chance at that medal, which makes it, of course, much less likely that he got up in that meeting and offered to surrender his place on the team.
Well, plus the idea is not a bad one, that he wants to make sure that they win, not only for himself, but for his country.
Of course. You know, and at that point, he is very upset with what the German press has been writing, calling the black Americans on the team the black auxiliaries, famously, suggesting that their victories don't count because they're subhuman. So he had every reason to be motivated to defeat them and to assure that victory. As it turned out, the Germans and the Dutch were no threat. The Germans didn't even win the silver medal. They won the bronze, and the Dutch were disqualified. The Italians won the silver. So Robertson's rationale was completely silly. But there's no doubt that today Jesse Owens would be running. That doesn't mean that Frank Wyckoff and Foy Draper should have been running instead of Stoller and Glickman. Wyckoff was, by all reports, Sam Stoller was faster than Foy Draper. And so the question really remains why Foy Draper ran and neither of the Jewish runners. But in terms of what Jesse was thinking, if he did stand up in that meeting, I have to think he either had a serious reconsideration and decided he wasn't going to be selfish, or he was just saying it to be polite, knowing that he wasn't really going to change anybody's mind.
Well, we're going to be joined by Luke Jensen in just a second, who always has an interesting perspective. But before Luke joins into this conversation, let's get to, I think, the most interesting story of all, which is the unlikely friendship that Jesse Owens struck up with his German rival, broad jumper Luce Long, and what that did for him.
Well, it's a great story, and I think, unlike a lot of the other stories that have been passed down over the last 70 years, it's not apocryphal. Jesse Owens was the greatest broad jumper in the world, long jumper in the world going into these games, the world record holder. But in the qualifying rounds, he's having a hard time. He unintentionally fouls, if that's possible, on his first attempt, not knowing the German procedure that precluded him from taking a practice run. He fouls on his next attempt. It's a ridiculously short jump, qualifying level that he has to meet, something he's been doing for high school, but now he's down to one last jump and he's getting nervous. Who comes over to him to give him some advice? None other than Lutz Long, the great German broad jumper, who was not Owens' equal, but he was as good as, he was probably the second best broad jumper in the world at that moment. And he says, Jesse Owens, in his broken English, what has got your goat? You're so good, this shouldn't be a problem at all. Just put the, just in your mind, put the takeoff point 6 inches behind the line. You're sure not to foul, and you're sure to make the distance easily anyway. Now, whether or not that conversation actually took place, and Jesse always said that it did, or usually said that it did, and certainly that's the legend, it's clear that Jesse Owens did take that advice or from someone and put it into his head. He qualified easily. Then in the final, he ends up out-dueling Long in this great back-and-forth competition, each of them breaking the Olympic record back-and-forth. Owens wins the gold medal with an Olympic record jump, and Long is the first person to congratulate him. And Long, you got to remember, Nick, he is the embodiment of the Aryan ideal. He's sleek, he's blonde, he's tall, he looks like, you know, Hitler's Aryan fantasy. And he runs over, he congratulates Owens, he grabs his arm, he parades with him through the infield right in front of Hitler. And then that night at the Olympic Village, they spend a lot of time talking, Jesse and Lutz Long, and they're from different worlds, they're from different socioeconomic backgrounds, black, white, etc. But they find a link, and it's a poignant story that's maybe the greatest story of friendship and sportsmanship, certainly in Olympic history.
And probably one of the stories that today would have been covered, but of course it's taken 71 years to come out in detail because of your book. We're joined by Luke Jensen. Luke, as you listen to the story of Jesse Owens, we've talked about Serena Williams, we talked about the interesting evolution of black athletes with you on the show before. Let's shift, if you will, Jeremy and Luke, to the subject of Tony Dungy and his accomplishment, looking back over the last 71 years, and of course the comparisons right after the Super Bowl Sunday night to Jackie Robinson. And in his usual humble way, Tony Dungy said, you know, I was a little bit floored by that, but when I thought about it, you know, it was fair to ask the question, even though I don't believe this is anything near that accomplishment. Let's start with Luke. First of all, buddy, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Jeremy Sheff has one of the best backhands in broadcast history. If you ever play him, stay away from the backhand.
So, Luke, tell me what it means to you when you see a man of the character and the grace and the serenity, as well as the leadership and the intelligence of a Tony Dungy, what this means in the history of the evolution of the black athlete in America.
Well, I was very, very fortunate to be in the pro game and as a top amateur when the great Arthur Ashe, in our sport, transcended both race and the way you lead a group of people. He was my Davis Cup captain in 1984, and he had to captain guys like John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors and make all that work. His leadership, when I see Tony Dungy, the way he stalks the sidelines and how he supports his team and how he conducts himself, he reminds me so much of an Arthur Ashe. And I think leaders, doesn't matter what race you are, if you look at how Tony leads and how Arthur Ashe led his life and led his men through competition, that's the way to be a winner.
Jeremy Sheff, before we let you go, this is a fantastic book. I certainly am excited that it's come out, and I feel it helps connect us to the lessons of history which we so sorely need in sport and in society. But tell us what it means to you when you see the evolution of this history manifested in a Tony Dungy and a Lovie Smith.
Well, I think the thing that strikes me, first of all, is that at the end of the day, it was a nice story, it was a significant story, but it wasn't an epic story. You know, we were expecting this at some point. I mean, Tony Dungy could have won a Super Bowl 6-7 years ago in Tampa. There had been black head coaches in the NFL since the late 80s when Art Shell became the first since the days of Fritz Pollard in the 1920s. And I think Dungy ultimately is correct. This is not a milestone on par with anything, you know, such as 60 years ago with Jackie Robinson breaking the color line, but it is another step. It's an important step because it's kind of like what it means for Peyton Manning. You know, Peyton Manning finally got, you know, this this burden off his shoulders. He's now an ultimate winner, and now black coaches can finally say in the NFL, hey, we can do everything. There's no reason that the league is 70% black, but there are only 6 black head coaches. That doesn't make sense. We win Super Bowls. We reach Super Bowls. It's time that we get the same respect as everybody else. To me, that's really the significance of it. And I think it can be a watershed moment in the way that it was a watershed moment when Doug Williams played so brilliantly in Super Bowl 22.
Well, Jeremy, we're going to let you go, but, buddy, I appreciate it. And for all of you listening, pick up a copy of Triumph. It's a book about against the backdrop of swastikas flying, stormtroopers, an African-American son of sharecroppers sets 3 world records, destroys Hitler's myth of Aryan supremacy, but it's a lot more than that as well. Jeremy, thanks so much.
Nick, Luke, it's great talking to you guys.
Appreciate it, my friend. Hey, Luke, when we come back, let's get a quick update on the Davis Cup starting on Friday, okay?
You got it.
All right, when we come back, Luke Jensen with a quick update on the Davis Cup, and then we'll switch to something that Luke knows a little bit about with a father that played in the NFL, which is this interesting growing body of research on concussions and the consequences of careers hitting the hell out of human beings and being hit as well. When we come back on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122, it's an important subject. Stay tuned.